Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Well, first of all, Nancy, thank you for the opportunity to talk with your listeners. You know, this experience is, I'm always energetic and enthusiastic about the work that we do, and having the opportunity to share that is important. And I think, you know, with you, Nancy, you know, kind of leading the discussion was very helpful, because many times I sort of start off on and get off on a tangent, and you help me get back on track and to, you know, make sure I hit the high points of what we're talking about.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's guest mentor is part of Minnesota's innovative science and technology investment and commercialization arena. I asked Pat Dillon, or rather persisted and finally persuaded her, to join me in two conversations to kind of demystify federal funds and research and development, how they're connected, and really navigate the journey of startups and existing businesses as they transform their high-risk, high-impact technologies into marketable products and services. Pat Dillon has an MBA. She's a treasured innovator in Minnesota science and technology investment and, like I said, commercialization arena. She's the founder and director of Minnesota's Small Business Innovation Research and the Small Business Technology Transfer Accelerator Program, known as Minnesota SBIR/STTR Accelerator. We're just going to go by the SBIR/STTR acronym to make things simpler. But that program helps a diverse portfolio of startups and existing small businesses transform their high-risk, high-impact technologies, like I mentioned when we just spoke a second ago, into marketable products and services. So through education, coaching, and navigating across 11 federal agencies, Pat and her team help small businesses to apply and secure SBIR-IR funding. These programs are referred to as America's Seed Fund, one of the largest sources of early stage capital for technology commercialization in the United States. So taxpayers' investments, so our monies in small innovative businesses, is what has supported SBIR/STTR funding since 1982, and we can thank Pat for that. Pat has over 30 years of demonstrated knowledge, experience, and relationships that allow hundreds of businesses to apply and win funding. Since 1994, Pat has facilitated $250 million in her program funding that has resulted in additional investments, patents, jobs, mergers and acquisitions, and new products and services for global markets. Pat's a recipient of the prestigious Small Business Administration Tibbetts Award for excellence in the programs. Pat chairs the Technological Leadership Institute Advisory Board at the University of Minnesota. She's a retired United States Navy commander, which we'll talk about in a little bit. She served 40 years with one 10-month tour in Afghanistan supporting Operation Enduring Freedom. Pat earned her undergraduate and graduate degrees from Winona State at the University of Minnesota. One of Pat's recipients said, "Pat Dillon and Minnesota SBI are incredible assets to the Minnesota tech and startup community. Nothing can prepare you for putting together an entire grant package and actually submitting it. Pat took the time to read through the entirety of our proposal, letters, of support, budget, justification, a 15-page grant, everything, leaving no stone unturned. Without Minnesota state funding for a program like this, and Pat as a passionate professional to help us, we surely would have a tougher time preparing and winning our NSF SBIR Phase 1 award of $256,000 with the potential for $1 million in Phase 2. And this quote came from Wesley Wiersland. He's a PhD and CEO of Lea Labs, which they develop cancer treatments for dogs. And there's two prior guest mentors on the podcast that you might be familiar with. I'll include their links to their shows, who've also been part of the Minnesota Small Business Innovation Research and the Small Business Technology Transfer Accelerator programs that Pat teaches. And those two people you might remember, Habit Aware with Neela Idnani Kumar and Samir Kumar, and also Blue Cube Bio and Allison Hubble, the founder, with and Karen Dodson spoke to us about their innovative cell technologies and a lot of in-depth work that takes place here to prepare people to launch their ventures and really be successful at it when you're doing a lot of research and development. So welcome to We Mentor Mondays, Pat.
Thank you, Nancy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. So how did you get started in the world of federal research and development funding?
How did I get started?
Yeah.
Well, I think it all started back in 1989 when I was working at Winona State University in the Small Business Development Center. And well, actually, I hadn't really started. I was going to school at Winona State at that point, and I knew the SBDC director, and she said that there was an opportunity for a position with a new program called the Procurement Technical Assistance Center program. And Winona State was a recipient of some federal funding for that program. And so I was hired as one of three people to help Minnesota companies in southern Minnesota compete for federal contracts to sell their product or service to a federal agency. That position lasted for about 2 years. And then in 1992, I moved from Winona or southern Minnesota to Minneapolis and started working with the Minnesota Project Innovation, which took over the contract from Winona State. And I continued on in the procurement position, but then the SBIR position opened up in 1994. And that's how I got started in the SBIR program. And I found that working with novel ideas or concepts or projects and scientists or engineers or startup companies or even existing companies was really a good fit for me.
Yeah. And before you started in that, you didn't go directly from high school to Winona. You were inspired to join the Navy in 1976 at 19 years old. You later became a Navy commander and served a 10-month tour in Afghanistan. Tell us what inspired you to take that journey and some of the biggest lessons you learned from that experience.
Well, it was, yes, of course, it was 1976, and I didn't come from a family of people that went on to college. Both my parents went on to just get an eighth grade education. I mean, that was the reality back then.
Yeah.
So I didn't come from a family of like, okay, you're going to go to college after high school. Although I noticed that a lot of my friends, of course, were going on to either technical school or to college. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had a sister that had wanted to go into the Navy. I mean, this was pretty groundbreaking because this is just right after Vietnam. And so she consequently ended up meeting her husband, and she said, well, frankly, you don't have a boyfriend, so why don't you just go into the Navy? And I listened to my big sister. It was a life-changing decision, and I'm so glad I did it. And so it was such a huge stepping stone for me in my life. And so it was because of that experience and being 18 years old at the time, when I raised my right hand and said, I do it, Uncle Sam. Pretty significant decision, of course, but it was also, there weren't a lot of women that were going into the military, especially, I think, after Vietnam. And being a young person, you think you know it all, but you really don't know much at all.
Yeah.
So I just thought, now when I look back, it's like, wow, that was such a big decision. And yeah. So I was 19, I was actually 18 when I raised my right hand, and then I was 19 when I actually went into boot camp. And I realized then that I made a really good decision for myself. And the one thing that I would say with the Navy, they always, when the military gives you this test called the ASVAB test, and it really tries to figure out what's your aptitude for certain things. And so, of course, I had taken this test, and I was scheduled to go to school to be an aviation administration person. And that turned out to be just an excellent fit for me. And in fact, I use some of those skills even in my work today, because it's just, there's a lot of similarities with the reading and the analyzing and critiquing things and making sure that it's all good. And so that was really a good fit for me. And then I had some tremendous leaders that I worked with in the Navy that really also had such a profound impact on me.
Mm.
And it was because of my first, when I was on active duty for a little over 4 years, it was that experience that really, you know, laid the foundation for me to continue to serve for many years after that in the reserves. So, okay. And then I had the all expense paid trip to Afghanistan at the ripe age of 53. And that was life changing too. Yeah.
Yeah, because you had a lot of life experience when you went there for 10 months.
Well, yeah, anybody at age 53 has a lot of life experience. So I joke, I thought, my gosh, I'd probably be the oldest person there.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, I was not the oldest person there. And it was a unique experience, no question about it.
So that was about 10 years. What did you experience? Well, what was the work that you were doing there?
So I started out in the aviation community within the Navy, and then I switched over into the intelligence community. So when I went to Afghanistan, I went over there as an intelligence officer. Mm-hmm. And our mission was to train and advise the Afghan National Army Intelligence Force. And so I was one of a small team of people that trained and advised the Afghans. And I say that I kept the home fires burning, because I was the one that stayed behind in the office and to address any issues that might come up while the teams were out training and advising the Afghan intelligence force. So it was an important role, and we did our best and to help train up the Afghan National Army intelligence force. And it just was a meaningful mission. Unfortunately, you know how things turned out.
Yeah. So in August of 2021, yeah, the Taliban totally took over Afghanistan. Were you surprised with how that all came about and the speed of it?
Well, oh gosh, that's such a heavy question. I think I was surprised at the speed of how fast it happened. However, having been around, and I wasn't around the Afghans all that much, but they just have a different mindset. They have a totally different culture, and you cannot instill courage in a person. Either they have it or they don't. And I think that when I think about the Afghan situation, I mean, there were so many things that we were, as a Western civilization, imposing this country. I always say we were the PhDs of military capability, trying to teach a kindergartner how they should set up their whole military operation in their country. And I know I'm a civilian now, but I couldn't really say that when I was in the military. But I just think that we should have just kept it really simple for them, and and gave them capabilities that they could manage and handle rather than trying to set up this very elaborate multi-layered organization for both the Afghan National Army and for the National Police and the Air Force that were trying to stand up in that country. When I first went over there, I thought we were part of, our group was part of a very large organization, $10 billion a year NATO training mission. And I mean, you're literally standing up an army and a police force for a country. So you can only imagine all the different functional areas that you need to cover. So with even just in the army, you had supply, you had medical, you had dental, you had intelligence, you had the infantry, you had all these major, you know, sections, and then all the materials and supplies and other things that would go along with it. So you can imagine how, why we had this $10 billion budget with the NATO training mission.
Yeah.
And that was every year. But that was just trying to get the army and the police force stood up, but that didn't, you know, take into account all the other security forces that were all over the country. Hmm. It was a major effort. And it's unfortunate that we didn't turn out the way we thought it would.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is why I go back to, you can't teach courage. You either got it or you don't. And they apparently, the Taliban it's terrible what's happening, especially for women.
Yeah, they didn't really fight back. Like, I thought that's what all the training was about. Like, it was just astonishing. Like, I thought it would be more like Ukraine, where the people took charge and were fighting back. Different country, different situation. But totally different culture. But I felt, I was shocked with, I thought there was more of the infrastructure of Afghanistan and the leadership, I thought, was stronger.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is, I mean, I'm sure there's people that are a lot smarter than me that, I certainly a lot smarter than me and more educated in this space than I am, but you can't teach
courage. Yeah. Okay.
Teach courage. Yeah, it's, I mean, I boil it down to that. There's probably many other factors to take in consideration, but it's cultural, and I think it's all about courage.
Yeah, mustering up the internal. Yep.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I think the other component of this, and this is where I think about, you know, Afghanistan and how any external country like Russia, England, they've all, including the U.S., have all tried to go in there and impose our way on the Afghan people and culture and so forth. And it just doesn't work. And the other piece is that education, it was a woeful situation. And so when you don't have an educated civilian force or educated civilian population, that really does impact your overall security for your country.
Yeah.
And then especially with I saw it with some of the Afghans that we had to deal with. I mean, we, relatively speaking, were training the cream of the crop. And that was pretty more like probably a fourth or fifth grade education level, which was considered a cream of the crop.
Wow.
So it's disappointing what happened.
Yeah.
It's disappointing even from a taxpayer perspective, my gosh, we spent trillions of dollars. Like, where did the money go? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Well, this is, yeah, exactly. Wow. What are some two values that you hold most dear in your life out of your experiences?
Well, integrity and trust. You have to, if you don't have integrity, I mean, that doing the right thing or trust, you got to have trust. If you don't have trust, I don't think you have a good relationship.
Yeah.
And so those are my two main values.
And, yeah. And you have a servant type leadership style. Do you want to explain a little bit about that?
Well, I think that being a servant leadership is you always think of others before yourself. And I think maybe that probably ties in with having been in the military all these years, that you always take care of your people. And you always, and in my case, I take care of my clients. And so I approach things from that perspective and always trying to do the right thing and just be there for these companies that I work with. And I want them to be successful. And I can see the impact of, if you can get somebody like a Wes to get to that first award, how it just really does make a difference for their future. Because sometimes there's only the only way that some of these companies get off the ground, I mean, really get off the ground, is through SBIR or STPR funding. And then it establishes credibility. The company's gone through a rigorous vetting process. The science is strong. And so they're in a good position now to attract outside investment and go on to the next phase, or maybe even get other funding through another agency if it's appropriate. So it's really important. It's really important for these young startup companies.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's...
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just said it just... I mean, I've seen it. I've watched it in action every day for like 30 years. Making it's just a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really a big difference. I mean, it's...
Yeah. So you went in your early, you know, adulthood, you went into the Navy in 1976. You ended up at Winona State in 1989, and then in 1994 you joined the small business innovation research kind of community for small business. And if we could maybe have like a linear discussion that you talked about off air about the role of SBIR, STTR at the national level and how it kind of translates to how you work with Minnesota companies.
Sure. So I'm going to go back to 1976. So yeah, I signed up in 76, went into boot camp in 77, spent a little over 4 years on active duty. And then I got married, had a child, and then I went into the reserves. And then in 1986, I moved back to the Midwest. Or 1985, I moved back to the Midwest. And I was working at this terrible little job in Winona, making $4 an hour.
Oh, my God. It's hard to just get my head around that. But yeah, in 84.
I know. Yeah. Well, it's hard for me to get my head wrapped around that, too. But, you know, I as much as that was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that was a scenario. But I was working and I thought I always had the GI Bill, because when I signed up in December of 1976, it was December 30th, 1976. And the old GI Bill was still effective at that point. And little did I know at the time when I signed up that I was actually giving myself a $20,000 educational fund to go to school. So I always had that. And then so it's 1985 now. I'm working at this silly little job at this multinational company and making $4 an hour. And I thought, I'm smart. I know I'm smart because I learned that about myself in the Navy. And I've got the GI Bill. So I'm going to go to Winona State. And so I applied and, of course, started out as a sophomore because all my military education and training and so forth accounted for, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 credits. I don't remember now. So I started out as a sophomore, and every time that I thought college was getting tough, I always thought about that silly little job. And I said, you know what? I'll never, ever go back to something like that again, because I know I'm better than that.
Yeah.
I'm smarter than that. And so that was, in a weird way, was kind of a motivation And probably when you're doing statistics, you're probably really wondering, what am I doing in college? I always thought about that silly little job. But then I was also in the reserve. So I was a very busy person back then. I was in the Navy, reserves, and I was traveling down to Glendale, Illinois once a month. I had my daughter. I was working part-time at the university, helping other veterans get their benefits started. And then, of course, going to school full time.
Yeah.
And so after undergraduate school, I decided that I still had some GI benefits left. So I decided to transition right into the MBA program at Winona State. And that's when I got connected with the SBDC, and the rest was kind of history. But transitioning, I mean, every point in my life has been a stepping stone to something else.
Yeah.
And so you always know that one door closes, another door opens up. And so when things transitioned from Winona State to Minnesota Project Innovation, which was the private nonprofit, and I started working with them, and then the SBIR position opened up, and it was just such a great fit with who I am as a person and the values behind why these two programs exist in the first place, really aligned with who I am as a person, because I believe in the American dream.
Yeah. So who created the Minnesota Project Innovation? Because it's a liaison at that time between Minnesota companies and getting federal funding.
Well, so the SBIR program, so I'm going to start with the SBIR program because that does tie in with why MCI was created in the first place.
Okay.
So there was a gentleman by the name of Roland Tibbetts who worked at the National Science Foundation, and he recognized that small innovative businesses had to compete for any federal funding with the universities or with large companies and so forth. So the pilot program was created that allowed small businesses to compete for the NSF funding. And this was the basis for the national SBIR program. So the results of that pilot program then led to the legislation that was introduced into Congress in 1981 to actually establish a national program that would require any federal agency that had an extramural R&D budget of $100 million a year. So this initially started out with 12 federal agencies, and now today it's only 11. But that was back in 1982 when Congress authorized and appropriated funding for the SBIR program, and then it was signed into law by President Reagan.
Okay.
So SBIR was in effect in 1982. Then in 1983, there was Governor Perpich assembled a commission on small business to support the creation of a private nonprofit organization that would help Minnesota firms compete for SBIR funding. So that's what led to the creation of Minnesota Project Innovation. And so MPI started in 1984, and it got funding through the federal government, through the Small Business Administration, and it got state funding. And it was this lean, mean organization that its mission was to help Minnesota companies access those federal SBIR funds and to navigate the complicated world of those funding programs, and also support the business development aspects of a startup company or a small business. And it, you know, grew to then also, so that existed for a number of years. And then in 1992, MPI acquired the Procurement Technical Assistance Program, and then I transitioned from that program over into SBIR. So this is kind of like the evolving history of MPI. And then in 2004, or 2003, I should say, the legislature didn't appropriate any funding for MPI, which was a very sad day. When it had 20 years of success, and an impact, and it still doesn't make any sense to me to this day why that decision was made, but it was. And then I tried to keep it going for a year, and I wasn't successful in doing that. So, but now I've been back in all, since 2014 and trying to rebuild what was once pretty impactful and doing it on a shoestring.
Wow. Yeah. When the legislature decided in 2003 not to fund Minnesota Project Innovation, then that went into effect in 2004. And in
2004, I tried to keep it going and got back into the governor's budget for a small amount of money. And that was the year, it was a huge budget deficit, and we didn't get our federal funding either. So then it transitioned into the state agency. And it was there for, you know, 8 years and 9 years, and then it was dormant for 3 years. And then that's in 2014 when I came back after being in Wisconsin for 9 years. We started it up again. It's so, a startup.
You really can't find yourself there with startups all the time. Well, and at the time, so shortly after, when there was no funding, then the University of Minnesota started the Minnesota Cup, which is an annual contest for small business owners and entrepreneurs to take their, to get some help and seeing if they can get larger, win some different awards. Was your involvement at that time, did you, in 2005, did you get involved with the Minnesota Cup at all?
Well, by this time I was over in Wisconsin. I had taken a job with the University of Wisconsin as part of Governor Doyle's Grow Wisconsin plan, which was called the Wisconsin Entrepreneurs Network. And I was one of four regional directors that was hired. And I was excited about that position. Like I said, one door closes, another one opens up. And so this was an opportunity for me to work with a colleague of mine in Madison and also demonstrate that you could have SBIR awards in other parts of the state other than just Milwaukee and Madison, which we were able to prove. And the Minnesota Cup is a business plan competition.
Yeah.
And that is not the focus of what the work that we do. I mean, we work closely with the Minnesota Cup, and a lot of our companies that I work with also apply to the Minnesota Cup. And there's been three grand prize winners that have SBIR funding in their history. So, I mean, there's a synergy there with Minnesota Cup. There's a synergy with a lot of different efforts that are underway here in Minnesota. I mean, technology, science and technology covers a wide path. And so we, you know, we're just one piece of one spoke on the wheel, but a really important spoke because it brings in money to support that company. And this is highly competitive funding. This is hard to get. This is not a slam dunk.
Right. And so what's the process like when business owners are taking a look at your two programs? How long is the process of them before, from when they start the paperwork and organizing all the information that they need to submit funding, to request for funding? What's the process? And what are the variables in the amount of money that the awards that people receive?
So there's nothing consistent across the agencies other than they either offer grants or contracts depending upon how they do business as a federal agency. They each have their own mission. They each have their own research areas of interest. And so as a company thinking about pursuing this kind of funding, first of all, you got to make the decision that this is something that you want to do as a business and that you're willing to put the time and energy into learning how to do this, because it is highly competitive. You don't win on the first time. It's very rare that somebody wins on the first time. It's rooted in science and technology and R&D, and we're working on ideas or concepts or projects that won't hit the marketplace until maybe 4 or 5 years from now. So this is a long journey for any company thinking about this. But, you know, when you think of what are your options, you've got a really innovative idea or concept or project that you know has strong commercial potential, but you have to get through the R&D first before you can get to commercialization. So where do you get that funding? A bank? Heavens no. They're very risk averse. Angel investors, venture capitalists, possibly, if they're willing to be really patient with the dollars and support high risk kind of R&D. So this is why this SBIR
and give up some ownership.
Right. And so this is where SBIR and SBTR funding is really important to small innovative companies, because there's no equity dilution and you don't have to pay the money back and you keep the IP.
Yeah.
So this is a really incredible federal program, both programs. The STTR program requires a small business to collaborate with a research institution like the University of Minnesota or Mayo Clinic, or maybe some other entity within the U.S.
So that's the Small Business Technology Transfer Accelerator Program.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when I say SBIR, SBTR, they're all combined together and they're not separate. So when we get a project or company comes with a project or technology they want to develop, we look at, well, which, depending upon the rules and the regs and the requirements for each program, we will help that company determine which program is best for their project. And so there's many factors to consider as a part of making that decision. But it's all, to me, it's all lumped in together. We'll just pivot depending upon the needs of the project and the capabilities of the company and, of course, what they need in order to be successful.
So what are you seeing entrepreneurs and small business owners? How are they supporting themselves in the meantime?
Well, maybe some of them have raised capital through investors, angel investors, or maybe they're an existing small business with an existing product, product revenues or service revenues, but they got novel ideas or things that they'd like to do, but they just don't have the dollars to do it. So this is where this source of funding is really important to their efforts. I mean, we have companies that are consistently applying and winning funding to support their novel ideas or projects. I mean, I've never met an entrepreneur with just one idea. So it's a pot of money that is there to support a novel or a product development effort at the early stages. And we have companies, any size company up to 500 employees and has to be owned and controlled at least 51% by U.S. citizens or resident aliens, and all of the work has to be done in the United States. Well, there's a whole big pool of companies out there that they choose to seek federal R&D funding and they meet those eligibility requirements, they can participate in SBIR and STTR and request funding. And if they don't have the internal R&D capability, there's a whole bunch of technologies available at the U of M or Mayo Clinic that they could license and then collaborate with the university and go after SBIR, STTR funding. So there's like this, the space of innovation, research, and commercialization is a really unique component of the economy, not only here in Minnesota, but certainly nationally. And as a nation, we spend about $150 billion a year on R&D, federal R&D programs and so forth. And one little small piece of that is the SBIR and STTR. But there's a whole bunch of other dollars out there that companies can also access. But as when I think about if I'm a company and I need to want to bring something new to the marketplace, and it's probably going to take me 4 or 5 years, and there's a lot of technical risk associated with that, I'd be all over the SBIR and STTR programs. I would be learn how to do this and then connect with the researchers or the scientists or engineers that can help my company do this, because it's life-changing.
Yeah. So we're going to go into more examples in our next conversation and also more details as our conversation flows. So you can find more information about the SBIR/STR accelerator programs and Pat Dillon at mntech.org. mntech.org, and you'll find out a lot more criteria and a lot more details. All right. So thanks, Pat, for being here and joining us on our first conversation as we're looking at America's seed funding. What are the programs and what are the federal programs? There's 11 agencies that Pat works with to help Minnesota entrepreneurs get funding through the SBIR/STTR, to support technology innovations in Minnesota companies. So check that out and then join us in our second conversation. Thanks, Pat, for being a guest mentor today. It's been fantastic. Will you come back for a second conversation?
Of course.
Okay, great. All right. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Monfredo Notumer, brother from another mother. And thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned next week and we'll continue our conversation.
Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.